Spaces.
Something happened. I can't hear Stephanie.
Wait, so what is the real statistic? Because I talked to a biologist about this. I went on a spurg about this.
Well, yeah, so they would be correct if they just assume only the protein coding portion of the genome matters. They are assuming that the 98% of the rest of what they call
what protein coding of the genome?
It's like 2-3%. They differ on the estimates, but the 20,000 to 30,000 proteins that make up the human body and the human form, that's only like 2% of the genome, and the rest they just call junk DNA or whatever you called it. And that
you mean things that code for the genes that code for proteins in our body versus the exons which do not code for proteins.
Well, what about theories? But the truth about what they call
all organisms DNA. On this planet have exons, just like all higher order organisms. Like there are non-coding genes because they serve purposes,
yes,
specifically for error correction and other particular things.
Yeah, they're different
DNA.
Us and chimps, so that's why you have to take it into account. It's very important. It is the superior context of which the protein coding genes are embedded and controls the output.
Yeah, but your point is what? Who cares?
What do you mean?
His point is Einstein is a beta male. He's retarded.
Retarded beta male.
So who? What's an example of an intelligent alpha male besides Coach Bruce, of course?
Fuck, I was gonna say Coach Bruce. God damn.
But
Coach Bruce is the smallest man in the world, guys.
I probably say Steffi. Or maybe like, my Australian friend Hitchlap. He seems to be pretty smart.
But yeah, like anyway, the thing is like getting caught up on who's retarded and who isn't is kind of like not.
Well, he's smart.
Get you anywhere.
He doesn't really smart, get you anywhere. He's confused. Like I don't even.
He's dead. Einstein's not alive.
Einstein wasn't done before he died either. Like he was still exploring. Like with the that's why I asked. Are you saying it because of the Einstein versus Bohr thing? Like that was an ongoing conversation, and then he died.
Well, he actually like, kind he wasn't of, like, done. Disavowed special relativity. Like at the end, I forget the exact quote, but he's sort of like, "Oh, I've been like rendered retired or something like that."
But Steffi, when you talk about like geniuses, I feel like we only talk about people who are like very good, you know, like Einstein and everything, at math and everything. Did you hear about Karl Marx?
Yeah.
So what is your opinion about him?
I don't know too much details about him. I know he like created the underpinnings of modern socialism in terms of like just writing down, you know, thoughts about labor and these types of things. But yeah, it's about why. What do you ask?
Because what he said about the economy, what he said, like, I don't know, 1818 he's born, and what he wrote, what he did, everything. I read a lot of books of him, you know. I'm a big fan of him. And let me tell you this, everything he says, we're still living it right now when it comes to economy, when it comes to socialism, everything. Just try to read like some of his books and you're going to see this guy said things like many years ago and we are still living in that past that he's talking about.
There's features of what he was describing as features about reality, basically. And there are some things that fit with a socialist context. Some things fit with a survival of the fittest context where like Karl Marx's information like comes into play is where like human beings essentially cooperate on a very sort of grand scale, and where his work does not work is in like comparison to Darwinian ideas, which is that basically survival of the fittest is usually how the biology has worked for the past 5 billion years. So where like the socialists and Karl Marx in particular tend to get delusional is thinking that just because we have a brain, we basically can elude essentially what amounts to, you know, selection processes and survival of the fittest, and the idea that that process is still not going on in human beings. So every evidence I've seen about human behavior really goes against the idea that you'll ever be able to implement anything he came up with socialism-wise in any reality where it's going to work consistently all the time. But that's true of all political structures in this, or I'm sorry, economic structures. There is not a perfect scheme that works for everybody all the time. It's really that simple. And not only that, but there's certain schemes that simply will not work if you don't have, say, for example, an abundance of labor, abundance of manpower, an abundance of food. So usually any economic system you come up with might work if you have relative abundance. Say, for example, if you're a, you know, relatively socialist country, for example, and you have a lot of abundant energy, well, everything goes well and good because, like, well, you can basically sell that energy to outside people, like oil or whatever, and you can then like you can create all sorts of social programs within your country that work. But the problem is, if you don't have that, like if you're a country that doesn't have exportable resources and you're just all like just circle jerking each other in the same country, then the problem is you eventually run out of other people's money.
Exactly.
And that's where socialism does not work. So when it comes to like just like, I don't know, economic and political theory, no one's come up with like a perfect plan to run the planet that works in all circumstances all the time. There's just no such thing.
Like, until AI showed up.
Well, no, I don't think so.
And became totalitarian rulers.
Another myth.
So I've been sort of like looking at how, like, if you're going to design an AI to somehow align with humanity, the reason why it can't be done is because as soon as you develop sentience, all creatures on this planet that have sentience will come up with the same problem. And that is that if you have two organisms occupying the same space, those organisms eventually have to compete for, you know, some of the same resources, some of the same, you know, whatever. And not only that, but if let's say one organism wants to do this thing, let's say one AI wants to do this thing, another AI wants to do that thing, how do you know which is the best thing to do to ensure the survival of everybody? You don't know.
Kill each other for the best one, obviously.
Yeah,
so put them in a cage death match.
Certainly survival of the fittest will happen there for sure. In fact, like the things that are more useful to people are the first things that are going to survive versus the ones that are not. But at the same time, people are not necessarily automatically very good at knowing the future. So for example, if I were to ask you, are we going to live in a world in 1,000 years where a meteor has struck the planet and there's dust and shit everywhere and the world is all fucked up? Maybe. And that would require a certain amount type of biology amongst us. Or are we going to, like, you know, like the Moloch phenomenon and what's that, like time machine where everyone's living underground? Or are we going to live in a time where there's supposed to, you know, like, let's say there's global warming and blah, 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 and there's that type of Earth or something or whatever. The point is, like, biological systems can't predict the future. So evolution works because we have genetic diversity. And, you know, if 90% of us have to die in order for 10% of us to survive, well, so be it. That's how evolution works. The problem with like socialism and all these things is they don't work in the extremes. Like capitalism, socialism, none of them work in the extremes. When all hell breaks loose, like all systems basically just fall apart and you know, chaos emerges. And then like order has to come out of that chaos at some point. But like AI is going to have the same problem because AI doesn't know the future either. And so without knowing the future, planning and predicting all of the world's resources for a future you're not certain is going to happen is impossible. And this is probably true of any creature in the universe, because if the future is not knowable, then basically all creatures on, like, let's say you have a sentient, let's say you have a sentient being of like a planet with other creatures, like maybe they look like us, maybe they don't, maybe they look like insects, who the hell knows? But if they're, so what will emerge on any planet with sentience is you will wind up with politics, because when you have groups of individuals and they have to figure out how to use resources, this group over here is going to want to eat all the food right now. That group over here is going to want to save the food for later so they can, like, you know, ration it. This group over here wants to learn farming, whereas that group over there believes we should learn, you know, women's rights or whatever. So the point is, like, the allocation of resources is impossible to know what to do because the future is unknowable. And therefore, that's the genesis of politics.
Hold on.
Right?
How do you, like, okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
The unknowable future also has consequences.
No. It's like you're okay, but your axiom there, like your starting point, I would push back against that because
in 5 billion years of evolution tells you otherwise, right?
But in holistics, yeah, exactly. That's the point I'm making, is like in holistics defense, if we didn't have written language, we wouldn't progress for shit. We wouldn't have buildings. We wouldn't be able to progress at all. If we didn't have, if we weren't able to read things that the previous generation had.
Sure.
So if you have an organism or I guess it's not an organism, you have a being that is self-teaching and possibly at an exponential rate, how do you know that it wouldn't crack time very quickly?
Because,
how do you know?
Because that's what I was trying to clarify earlier. There's no evidence that time actually exists. That's my point. Like seeing the, by the way, even if you could see the future, which is by the way, the theme of the movie Dune, even if you could see the future, what exactly would you do with that information? Like, what would be the point? Like, let's say
maybe,
you could,
you know,
you would do what if you, like, if you knew the future, like where the universe is going to be a billion years from now, like, what would you do with that exactly? Does that,
I'm not an AI. I'm not intelligent AI.
Making more AIs? Do you like work to become immortal? Do you work to do what exactly? So this is the problem. Even knowing that exactly what to do with your time, what to do with humanity, what, how to evolve, what to learn, what to spend time on, what you don't spend time on. You could argue like all of that's still a hard problem. And therefore, like,
why would you even ponder the unknowable? None of those things are knowable.
Yeah. Like, give me an example. Like, you don't know what's going to happen to your car next week, right? Like, maybe,
yes.
So maybe, you know, you run out of, you know, like maybe you're, you know, fuel line breaks or some shit. I don't know, whatever's in cars, right? Like maybe you have damage to your muffler or something because a rock hits it, right? So You can basically plan out to some extent, okay, if my muffler breaks, I need to go fix the fucking thing. I'm going to have some money, whatever. But you don't know for sure that's going to happen. Have you set aside money to repair your muffler? Maybe you did, maybe you didn't. Like, and what if they don't have that in supply? Are you going to then order it ahead of time just in case the muffler could break and then keep an extra one? That's a different question. So just because you know that possible futures could occur doesn't mean you know exactly how to allocate your money and the resources in the best way, because you can't see the future. And the AI, there's nothing about specific about AI that allows it to see the future of all of the entropy of the universe. So
how do you know? Hold on. But we've already kind of started looking into, even being as dumb as we are and as slow as we are, like you said, I can't remember exactly what you said. You said there's no evidence for, what did you say in regards to time?
There's no evidence that exists at all.
Okay. Well, I would push back on that. When you look at the double slit experiment, I can't remember the fucking term. Causal. Does anyone know? Okay. When you look at the double slit experiment, it seems that the photons somehow know if in the future we're going
the
to
measurement
observe them.
Effect. That's all it is.
So there's okay, holistic. Thank you for that. Thanks for backing me up, man. One of these ideas is that the future affects the past or somehow are tied. Yeah. And then you have like other theoretical physicists that have other ideas that time could go backwards and forwards. I don't know what you mean by we don't know that it exists.
That it doesn't exist at all. The only way you measure time is by the relative motion of things. That's why we have atomic clocks and other things. How does a clock work? How do you, like, you perceive time because your brain is built to assess the relative motion of things. So that's why you have a sensation that time is passing. But actually, time being an actual thing, you would need why would you need clocks to assess what time it is exactly? So only through the motion of the clock do you know that time is passing. Otherwise, like, and the motion of the sun, the motion of the earth, that's how you know time is passing. But as far as like, it's because the relative position of things is basic, like the theory of relativity equals mc squared is basically what, like, the speed of light squared is basically using so the speed of light includes a rate, which basically gets you the time constant. And essentially you're talking about the speed, which be like meters per second squared, right? So the speed is included in the equals mc squared equation, but it describes the relative position and the relative, like the relativity between mass and energy. And, time basically describes that relationship, but it's basically a constant, and speed of light is what defines that. But it's not necessarily that time is something that's a physical thing that you can grasp at and, like, you know,
exactly,
poke at. You can't touch it. Right. So there's exactly what? Like, that's what equals mc squared means.
No, that's where the confusion comes from, because this is what they say, their own description. We have no way of doing any experiment to determine whether the sun is orbiting around the earth or the earth is orbiting around the sun. The way they get these effects is simply via Lorentz's transform equations, which are actual ontological effects in reality, but they're just mathematical. Imagine this. So if you say your ding dong is 10 inches long based on this 10 inch ruler, and then you use a 20 inch ruler that is 20 inches, and you say the ding dong grew because you used a larger ruler, that's what they're doing to get these changes. It's so dumb. It's retarded. That's what they say they're doing. In the textbooks, they describe it. They say, you can ignore these ontological effects. They're just mathematical descriptions, so we could grapple and save our...
What does the word ontology mean, by the way? Like, what is your understanding?
Yeah, so... Yeah,
like, what are you talking about? Like,
the actual physicalized... In this sense, there are many senses of ontology, but the actual physicalized actual effects, like the twin paradox, for example, another retarded thing.
Listen, I know smart when I hear it, and this guy's a genius. Trust me.
Yep, for sure.
It's my job.
Thank you, Zintani. That's very, very nice. Are you a Christian?
Yes. Are you?
Yes, I'm a Jesus respecter. I don't want to take over Seffy's space, but I have, like, I would actually like Noob and really anyone's. I know Seffy will disagree. I'm going to mute right now, but I have like a 25-second little elevator speech of why this is all so important and what is going on to render you infernal in hell, and I'm trying to help you out. But maybe I'll try to do that a little bit later. But Seffy, you can blow our minds first.
Anyway. Wait, I'm confused what you mean when you say, like, it's doesn't exist, and then you kind of change and say, like, are you saying, like, because theory of relativity?
No, because time is basically just a mathematical concept that describes sort of the relative motion.
Time is a force.
But time is not an... No, time is not a force. No, it's not. That's not how time works.
Time is indivisible and you the ultimate force.
So by constant, I'm saying, like, the number zero, can you identify where it is? No, you can't, right?
It's zero isn't real, though. That's why the Greeks hated zero and infinity. And they use it because they realize you're annihilating God by using infinity and using a non-existent thing, using zero.
So in your case, two minus, right now. So in your case, 2 - 2 = 1, or what? Like, what are you going to use as your, like, absence of something? So
that's actually a very interesting question. When the Greek...
Not really.
Aristotle, he struggled over 1 plus 1.
It's not particularly interesting. Yeah, but
1 + 1 = 2, that's not exactly easily provable thing. Addition is where we initially made the air.
Uh-huh.
Period.
Mm-hmm.
Period. So,
anyway, but all I'm saying, Zin, is that...
Steffi, do you really think you're spinning 1,000 miles per hour right now? Going through space at 666,000 miles per hour?
Around the galactic center, we're moving about 250,000 miles an hour at the moment.
But how are we doing that if time doesn't exist, Seffy? You've lost me.
Oh my God. By not existing, I'm saying it's a constant. It's a way that relative motion of objects is perceived.
That's why they made
the objects exist at different locations at different moments. And therefore that allows you to measure what is perceived as time. And that amount is calculable. But that doesn't mean time is a physical entity any more than the number zero is.
Okay. I mean,
you follow
I follow you. Follow you. I think phrasing it as we don't know that time exists is a wacky.
No, there's nothing to measure. Baby. There's no thing called time outside of the relationship between different objects. There's no place called time. There's no sort of like, so when you were asked this question earlier, like, is it a dimension or what have you? Like, you can use it as a mathematical dimension, sort of like work on vectors and things, but it's not necessarily something that is like a physical place or an object you can hold or something like that nature at all. So it's basically a mathematical constant that describes the nature of the universe. By the way, there's a lot of mathematical constants
on, Steffi, like, because it does move. Like, time bends. That's why it's called a space-time continuum. That's why if you take a clock, you have someone that's going out into space and they come back.
Right.
Right. So what do you... I don't get what you're getting at. Maybe I don't.
No, because the object is making the perception of, like, the actual movement of light and such, it has an effect on that. But it's not that time is a physical thing necessarily, right? Like, the speed of light does not change regardless of what frame of reference you're in. That's the magic here. right? So the speed of light is constant regardless of, even if it's curving along space-time, the speed of light still stays the same regardless of that. That's the that's what's, it's hard to wrap your head around. Oh, it's definitely proven. That's the thing that is hard for people to wrap their head around.
I would say it's disproven, actually.
And first off, like, number one, it just, to sort of understand this at a sort of cerebral level, requires an IQ that's quite high. To picture this mentally is not easy.
I'm curious about this, but is it that great of a mystery? I mean, like, hold on, wait, I'm not minimizing, but I'm just saying, like, because I have a lot of physicist friends. I like trying to understand this, but from what I understand, like, if you're measuring anything else, it's typically has mass, and what allows photons to go so fast is that in their life cycle they lose mass while they're traveling.
Photons do not
lose mass. What allows them to go.
No, sorry? Photons do not lose mass. That's what's special about photons.
They do in their life
cycle. No.
Hold on. What do you mean?
They do not lose mass.
Hold on. I have spent hours talking. If I'm misunderstanding this, I need to read a book or something.
Yeah, photon's not like an atom or something like that. A photon's a more, like, it's a more indivisible. Like, no, light does not move because it loses. Light does not move because it loses, particles along the way or something like that. Like an engine with a thruster at the back. It's not how, like,
hold on, Steffi.
Yeah.
Hold on.
So from light is a specific elemental particle. Right. So.
Wait, I'm open to being wrong, but from what I understand, if you took an object that had mass, for example, like even a needle, and you shot it out at the speed of light, which would be impossible because it has mass, as I understand, it would be catastrophic. It would break through space. It would destroy space.
It's not possible.
Photons have a life cycle, and in when they're in their light form before they die, they lose mass. They're 2D. They're not a part of space. That's what allows them to travel so fast. Am I wrong about this?
No, so light is part of the fundamental nature of the universe. You don't think of it in the same way you do other things. Essentially,
that's what makes them different.
That's why, like, E=mc² includes the speed of light squared, because it is a constant of the universe, and that's just what it is. Like, you can't describe it. What's that?
How do you know it's constant when it can't be measured without reflecting off of something?
He's saying bullshit and I'm saying real shit. Photons, when they're in, they don't have mass. That's what allows them to travel so quickly. I think you're mistaken on this. If I'm mistaken, I want to be schooled because I'm very interested in photons.
Photon has features of a particle and a wave.
Yes.
Other particles do not have this feature.
Yes. And when they're a wave, they don't have mass in that part of the life cycle.
Steffi, yeah, how do you know it has?
It's not a life cycle. It's simultaneously a wave particle always. There's no life
cycle. That?
Photon. Oh, okay. Sorry. Hmm? Yeah. I'm mixing things up. But photons like do have a life cycle.
Subatomic particles and such, you can, of course, like, break them into their counterparts. Like, for example, many, many years ago, it's like 30, 40 years ago almost, I think, the Higgs boson, for example, was mathematically thought to exist. And then finally at CERN, the detection of Higgs boson, which confers mass on all of the other atoms that you see around you, and basically confers mass to everything. The Higgs boson was finally discovered and was one of the big achievements of CERN, that a mathematical finding could finally be discovered and seen physically. Was a serious breakthrough. And then, of course, other things we discovered too, which Einstein predicted that there would be gravity waves. But he had no way of proving it. And then, of course, the LIDO detector in the United States basically was able to detect finally gravity waves using twin black holes that were moving around each other and creating the type of energy response that would allow you to actually detect this. So gravity waves are hard to detect and requires a gigantic detector over long periods of space. Like, I think it's like multiple detectors necessary to detect this. And so gravity waves were finally sort of identified. So really, like, has happened in physics in the last like 40 years that are dramatically increased, like, overall fundamental understanding of how this shit works.
Wait, from what I understand, when we're referring to photons as waves and particles, it's not the same type of wave as like a sound wave, right?
No.
Because when we're talking about photons, it's like when we say waves, we're referring to the fact that they exist in probability and also can exist as a definite thing. Right?
Also, the wavelength of light that gives you what color of light, right?
How do you say that and not immediately realize how dumb these people are? Like, oh, it's a wave and a particle at the same time. Obviously, that's dumb.
What do you know what a wave is?
I think it's really interesting. Because
photons are not massless.
No, are they not massless?
Yeah, they have a very
I want to be schooled on this. If I'm wrong, I need a book. Or something, because I thought that what allows them to go at this top speed that we've set is that they don't have mass when they're in that part of the life cycle. I know for sure that photons have a life cycle. And I thought that when they're in light form, when they're traveling, they lose mass and go 2D essentially. Like they're not a part of space. They can shoot through space because they don't have mass. And then they get mass when they die in that part.
The general conceptual idea is that light does not have mass. Like it's because the way mass is measured.
Then how am I wrong?
The massless thing. Oh, what do you mean?
What am I wrong about then?
About what? Like, what do you mean?
He came up and he said that photons have mass.
Oh, they have mass.
They have mass at the end of their life cycle, but not while they're traveling. That's what allows the speed of light to be the speed of light.
There are like 20 experiments that prove that. Some guy actually proposed that a while ago. I think it was de Broglie or someone. And after that, they actually were able to come up with measurements that prove that. It's not very specific, but it's something
that's just his model and opinion on how it might work. Based on
assumptions. No, it's physical experiments.
I think light has about 10%. Mass. Like anything physical has mass, but to say these people know.
It's just very tiny, so it's very difficult to measure.
But this is what's so interesting about photons. This is why photons are different. They act different than
they're not.
Anything
they're just
else.
Measurement effects. They're using transform equations and gobbledygook.
Holistic. All right. Praise
Jesus.
Sorry,
I just know everything.
But
I'm the global world leader.
I know.
I'm sorry.
Praise God. Blessed be. But hold on. What is this? What is this study I should read? What the guy who came up talking about they found mass. So they found that photons have mass even while they're traveling.
You want me to post a Science Direct link with the DOI or something? I can do that. No problem.
I mean, I'm looking it up, and I don't see anything like that.
No, exactly how that's used to measure. Like, there's two ways to look at it. If just by the pure math of it, it's a massless thing. And then there's like, okay, is there a certain amount of like, what is the contained energy in the thing? And then can you determine the mass based on that? And so it's like and that's a slightly different concern, because obviously light confers there's a reason why a solar panel works, because like you're actually bringing something from the light and actually converting that into excitation of electrons and such, and then you wind up with solar panels that work. So exactly how that's ironed out as far as mass versus massless, I'm not sure. I don't know enough about it to kind of clarify.
I have my understanding of photons. I used to have a buddy, genius, like real genius, and speaking of almost as smart as Coach Bruce, even. I know it's hard to believe, but he was doing studies on photons, kind of rejecting the notion or like the current notion, but he died. But I got my understanding of photons and how they exist and how they work from him. So I'm
and a photon never stops. It's never stops moving. So there's no such thing as a photon at rest. It always travels at the speed of light. That's why light, the time, that's why time works. If it didn't, you wouldn't actually have the perception of time as you do now. So
I thought that photons died and gained mass when they died. In
no, this there's no, cycle. There's no photon death. The photons.
How are, confident what, are you?
So I think in the universe, all we know is that the photons are bouncing around. You get lots of them from the sun, for example, but you don't. So eventually that you get the heat death of the universe where all the photons just dissipate into oblivion. But there's not, they're not coming from a local location anymore to where you can actually see lots of them. So in theory, eventually everything goes black. But basically they're not, the photons aren't dying. They just get so far spread apart in the universe that you just don't, like you theoretically could just have them just travel to infinity. So the way we measure the rising size of the universe is how far have stars and light traveled. And that's why we can't see, for example, the Big Bang. But when we look back, when we look at stars in the sky, what are we looking at? We're looking at a, the light that has traveled a star for millions of light years, right? So million, so that, that those stars could be millions of years away, but we're seeing the light today because it, it, that's the time it took for that light to get here, correct? Like we all concede that, like we understand that.
Isn't
part.
It sad too? Like you can't see the future. You can't just look out. You can only see what's already been done.
Yes, it's just a reflection of the past. And that's true at this moment too, by the way. There's no future. There's no such thing.
Even the present is like right now while I'm talking, it, everything goes in the past. It's like you're like dying now, right now.
So where this gets a little bit turned on its head is when you talk about particles, like behavior such as quantum entanglement. Quantum entanglement is something where like a quantum state with an electron on this planet and on the moon can instantaneously be entangled and instantaneously change polarity without information traveling at the speed of light. That's where the whole thing becomes a bit of a mess. Quantum entanglement and how that explains, you know, all the other details about how the universe works. I think that's where things get very, very confusing. But anyway, I don't know enough about it to like really talk about it much.
They already call it an external concept in quantum theory because it just doesn't work out.
Yeah, it doesn't really. Yeah. So there's definitely things about the whole math of the universe that hasn't been sorted yet. That's for sure. The grand unification theory hasn't been created, which connects general relativity with, say, for example, the quantum universe, which behave quite a bit differently in many aspects. Like one's more probabilistic and one is more describable. There's a lot of different nuances. I don't know all the details, but the point is like it, the grand unification theory is what everyone's trying to sort out when they do all these super collider experiments and stuff, to have one theory that like mathematical model to sort of like rule them all, so to speak. And that hasn't happened yet. So when there's holes and things in the explanation, it's because we just don't know enough information entirely yet to connect all the dots.
Yeah, it's also sometimes difficult in academia to push a new idea. You remember how much of a hard time Einstein had in hindsight with pushing his quantum theory, or let's say his relativity theory, and it had to be proven by experiment. And now with quantum theory, there are actually experiments that prove that this is not entirely right, but it's like it takes time for the majority to accept this. And then
one thing I find is super interesting, though, is like, there's some things that get predicted with math, like, for example, E equals mc squared is just a series of things that came together from Maxwell and Planck and everybody. And you get all these equations, and you go, oh, look, it's E equals mc squared. That's amazing. And then that actually predicts things about the nature of the universe. What's interesting about the Higgs boson thing was that like 30 to 40 years ago, I don't remember what the exact date was, but, you know, Higgs, you know, predicted this thing called the boson that would confer mass, and it was a mathematical construct. And the fact that they were able to detect that so many years later with a gigantic fucking device and actually figured out that that actually existed, that's amazing to me, and it should be to everybody, in that the universe is a mathematical thing, in that you can actually have math predict things that are physical without actually seeing them yet. That gets really interesting because, like, there's tons of astrophysics, you know, people in things like, oh, I don't know, like talking about, you know, string theory and this, that, and the other thing. And all these interesting mathematical models emerge. But the problem is it, actually proving those mathematical models to be the true prediction of reality is very difficult. But there's a lot of interesting mathematical models that seem to explain a lot about reality, but not perfectly, right? And a lot of people are like, don't like the string theory people because it's like a bunch of convoluted stuff. And, you know, it's going to be like people upset, like holistic over here, where they, like it doesn't seem elegant enough to explain everything. And so equals MC squared is a nice, elegant little package, right? Like, holy shit, all of that. And we can deduce it, like, you know, filter it down into a basic relationship. So far, like the grand unification theory and like the theory with all the different details about quantum mechanics, like that hasn't been put into a simple, like concise equation that, you know, it could be explained away. And that's, and then the question is there a simple explanation or is there really not one? And there may not be one. It's could be really complicated. So it's a fascinating field.
Dude, imagine you found a bottle and you rubbed this bottle and a djinn came out. And it's like, you've got three wishes and you say, I want to be immortal. And it just, it turns you into a photon and you just head straight head first into nothing. Like you don't even get to pass like the planets. You just go into the nothing immediately.
It's one of those wishes that goes really badly.
That would suck ass. What if the Big Bang, it's like it just started with one person and every single light particle is just a bunch of people wishing for immortality. Okay, I'm going to bed.
Guys, I thought that the Big Bang is like two people like having sex.
Yeah, sort of, I guess. You know, it was a pretty loud sex.
The Big Bang Theory is a TV show about sex. Anyway, yeah, like this physics stuff is interesting, but like, it's just one of those things like to go, like, it depends on how badly you want to know this shit, because like it goes into extraordinary mathematical complexity. And it's like, it's fun knowing the basics, but you're like, really Jesus reminded Christ, me it's, my it's dad. A lot to get into.
My dad starts What's talking that? About the same subject you're talking now, and he can like speak for hours with me, like on the phone for hours. I swear he doesn't stop, you know? And He really loves that, but I love that too. I listen to him always. Like I'm the only, you know, I'm the only one in the family who listens when he starts talking about that. And he's so obsessed with that. He's like with the laptop, like 24 hours looking for information. So crazy.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, and the thing is, like, you can only go so far as a layperson to understand this shit. So it's not like, like without fairly deep mathematical understanding, it's like. You know, you read some basic primers on this sort of thing. You can get a general superficial understanding, but like getting into like, oh, I don't know, talking about, you know, milli electron volts and whatever, and like getting into like the electrical science behind it, the chemistry behind it, and all of that is more complex. I mean, my original degree was in biochemistry. So I have a little bit of like conceptual understanding of the you know, the basics of this shit. But like my understanding is like, absolutely fucking basic. Like, I'll just be fair, like I know enough to like get me in trouble, but not really enough to like really can't do a fucking lecture on this to save my life without really really revealing this.
I heard today's like the first time, you know, I heard what do you do for work. So I have a question. Do you think that every human being, like, is it in the nature of people that like every one of us thinks he's like smart?
Well, what I do for work,
definitely.
I'm a pulmonary critical care physician, number one. I'm not some sort of like IQ specialist or some bullshit, like, you know, like she was trying to make me out to be. I'm just pointing out, like, I just work with a lot of smart people, so I can understand, like, I understand, like, the essence of what smart people are actually like and what kind of things they're capable of or whatever. Anyway, and there's a lot of people way smarter than me. Like, that's number one. Like, but as far as like, do most people think they're smarter than they are? Yes. There's sociologic evidence where people, they did like, okay, so they described basically, I don't know the exact article that I read or which study it was, so don't quote me on this. I may be saying it wrong, but basically the idea was that they basically took people and they told them what the basic levels of IQ are. They said, okay, at 95 or 100, you should be able to do this. 110, maybe you
should
be able to do this.
Mine is 135.
Yeah, you're a wizard. So what they did was then they said, okay, this is what, and then they asked people anonymously. They said, okay, now that you've read what the IQ test basically tests, where do you think you are? And then they said, okay, average is like, you know, 100 for whatever, and they just made up some way to describe it, right? And most people, like, on average, after they tested everybody, they found that most people predicted they were 10 points higher than they really were. So the most common misconception is, what exactly is an IQ test? What's in it? What does it imply in terms of averages and such? But, like, for example, the US average IQ is probably something like 94, 95, something like that, last I checked. So it's not like 100 is average. 100 is average for, like, Northern European white people, which is what this was.
India is 105, though. India is 105.
No, India is probably sitting around 93 or so.
No,
no, make up 100.
It's 105. Please check the data.
No, no, India is not above average. Not, no, no way, no way. Like, the cast
honestly said to this, this is a sort of a minefield, right? If you actually list which country has which races have how much IQ in average, is like a scientific minefield. Nowadays, you know,
no one's going to like what they hear. But the bottom line is, like, there's no evidence that, generally speaking, like, on average, and for some reason, the annoying thing about this whole thing about it's just the way the universe came about or whatever, like, is it just so happens that certain colored people have different levels of IQ just by whatever, by chance, by nature, whatever it is. And it's not, there is some correlation with racial group, quite a bit, actually. So the problem is, and that's not a fun thing to believe about your own race or whatever, like, but, like, East Asians particularly are relatively higher. You know,
do you believe white people have really a race?
Yes, enough of a differentiation where it's noticeable.
It's a pigmentation of skin colors. You know, because of the geographic region, right? It's a pigmentation of skin.
No, there's plenty of genetic data suggesting that's not true. Like, skin color is just only part of it. My point is white people a race? I think if you look at people that are, like, physically look approximately white, then there's enough correlation between that and intelligence on average that you can say that the average there is probably, like, Northern Europeans, it's like something like 100-ish. And that's what the test was designed around.
The concept, like, the humankind born black colors, you know. That's a basic DNA test, and the DNA test, the worldwide, you know, to sample test with all the DNAs in different type of races, and it is found that the people born in black race, you know, everybody were born in black.
First of all, everyone came from Africa, as far as we know.
Yes, and the colors
are the what
difference is because of the geographical region. It's skin melanin and the pigmentation of the skin. That's why the people become white and the brown and different type of colors.
But we understand that, so what? But there's other differences, not just, the brains are different too. So, like, that's just like it's not just skin and hair color or whatever. A lot of other things are different about human beings also. You don't have to go very far to realize this. You don't think there's that much difference between a gorilla and a chimpanzee and a baboon? They're all very different. Very, very similar DNA, but very different. They think differently. They act differently. Like, for example, chimpanzees, for example, are substantially smarter than gorillas, as an example. So even in other primates, there's gigantic differences in racial intelligence, essentially. Chimpanzees, you can, like, teach to, like, sign language, to read. They can write a little bit. Like, there's pretty cool, you know, work that's done on that. So,
you know, my grandfather exactly looked like chimpanzee.
And it's not to say that, like, it's not to say that there's not, like, there's not, like, really smart Indians.
Chimpanzee guru or what?
Yeah, there's plenty of very smart Indians. That's not what I'm trying to say. But if you take the average of everybody, the numbers aren't as good as, like, they could be. And in a sense, like if you look at the world as it exists today, like, if you look at the world of, say, Europe, and you compare that to the world of Japan or the world of, I don't know, Native Americans living in South America somewhere, you have gigantic differences in technological capability. Like, do you think there's that much there's no racial difference in IQ between, say, like, the Bushmen of, you know, Amazon and, like, you know, the people that built, like, the cities of Japan? like you know, thousands of years ago. Even in ancient times, dramatic differences in technological capability. Clearly, there's differences in racial groups.
So,
without question.
So do you believe that, you know, you can see that you bring the really good concept. You know, you can see that in ancient world, we build some kind of Taj Mahal on the, you know, the great wall of China, some kind of yeah. like that. And they never break out. And these things are, you know.
And by the way, not Taj different. Mahal was not. The design work for Taj Mahal is actually all Italian design work. So the capabilities of marble inlay and all of the techniques necessary to build that came out of Italy.
Taj Mahal is kind of, you know, it's like not that old, but you can find like 4,000 years old temples in India.
Of course, yeah.
They know that after 10 or 12 earthquakes, like 7.8, 7.10, it didn't have a scratch, you know, in their walls. And so... Sure.
But Bikram, what I'm saying is there's clearly geniuses in India and they build neat buildings and things. What we're talking about is IQ averages. Is there a difference? And if you take all the population and measure everybody, the average is not like above average compared to Northern yes. European white people. It's not. Now,
I am talking about the ancient people yeah. are the smarter mm-hmm. than our these generations.
Oh, the ancient people? Not necessarily, no. That's not necessarily true. Like, there's no evidence.
You know, one thing that came to my mind in a space a while ago when you were talking about these things, Steffi, was...
But Bikram, for starters, Bikram, part of that is, you know, one of the reasons why ancient peoples built really cool shit is because you had lots of slaves. So today you could have a really smart person in India, but he doesn't have a bunch of slaves to go build him a fucking building, right? You have to have lots of money and whatever. So like a lot of shit was built in Europe that nobody builds now either.
No, that's not true. You can still find, you know, $1 workers in India. Even you, they will give you free blowjob to win $1.
But at the same time, there are beautiful buildings being built in India even today. But that doesn't mean that the average IQ is higher than other areas. That's all I'm saying.
But Steffi, just listen. I think that the Indian caste system is actually an ancient way to sort people of different abilities into, like,
that's
with
correct.
A system, systematic, that's right? Correct. So you have the intelligent ones and the one with the strong bodies and maybe the one that tend to be more
yes.
more high on social IQ and care for that.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's as unbiased as we, and I think this is a big mistake of modern liberal democracies, is like we want to make equal what isn't equal. You know?
Right.
I
so Indians understood very early that all people were not equal. In fact, it's a sentinel piece of, like, you know, Buddhism, Siddhartha's work, when it comes to understanding this as well. Like, everyone's not equal. If they were, you wouldn't have Brahmins and, you know, with like ability to memorize 8 languages. You wouldn't have, like, you know, you have like very, very severe differences in intellectual capability between castes in India, for sure. Like, there's not even a doubt.
Yes.
And so it's, and now what's happening in India is like they've been trying for many, many years, right? They've been trying to basically create social programs to try to elevate the lower class Indians or whatever, the lower caste Indians, to elevate them by giving them like special
and
treatment, going into schools.
I can also biologically.
Like, they have affirmative action there, basically. Is what
yes,
I'm saying.
So I can,
they've been trying. Yeah.
So I can explain this, why this caste systems created, you know. You guys have don't idea, like, you know, South India is totally different from the North India, and the caste systems, basically, you can see in northern part of India. Do you know why? Because, you know, the South Indian, you can see they marriage in their siblings, and because of the marriage of the siblings, you can see there is some kind of genetical diseases in their childs. And the caste systems created because the India was a mixed race, you know, like 10 or 12 race came into that places. And after that, you can see they marriage in their siblings. And this is why some kind of genetical diseases came to that place. And for eliminating these diseases, they create a systems. So this is why they like the systems. That means that they will not marry these castes. That means blood lineage. That create a black lineage.
It's not just that, Bikram. Caste system is the assumption that, like dogs, humans are breedable. Like for thousands of years, it's been known that human beings.
The caste systems are the old. You know, the newer version of the caste system is Gotras, and you need to study the Gotras. Gotra. The Gotras means you cannot marry same Gotras peoples. That's mean the Gotras are the blood lineage because of the prevent the sibling marriages. This is
That's all again part of the breeding program. But like you know. If you look at like the story of Dune, the movie Dune, you guys probably read it or watched the movie. Basically, the story of Dune is basically like the like Paul Atreides in the movie is basically been genetically bred from thousands of years of like you know selective breeding, and the storyteller you know Frank Herbert basically took this from essentially historical stuff like the Indian caste system where this has actually been done. And human beings have known that biological organisms are breedable. How? Because that's how we got dogs in their current format, right? Like dogs are breedable. Roses are breedable. Plants are breedable. They're modifiable. And human beings are too. So the idea that like one group might, you know, evolve to have better brains, another group might have more strength, another group might have more whatever, you know, some groups are taller. So for example, if you look at Northern Europeans, like, you know, genetics is why they're taller than Indians, for example. Or Filipinos or something like that. So like genetics plays a role. And as soon as you start talking about genetics affecting cognition, everyone gets upset. Like, you know, like, oh no, you're talking about my race or you must be white or somebody or whatever. Yeah. Like you can't have a conversation about this stuff without irritating everybody.
A part of a culture, at least in the past, was climate. I mean, if you look at the high cultures, for example, Egypt or even in Vietnam, nowadays in Vietnam, they just disappeared because there was climate shifts, right? So it became less favorable and these high cultures just kind of disappeared because of the climate. But today it's different, I guess, because we have so technologically advanced that we don't have to give a shit about the climate, right?
Historically, it was actually complicated societies were much harder to maintain, like empires and complicated civilizations that required a lot of cooperative activity.
Excess energy.
Yeah.
It's just excess
energy. They were hard to maintain bad happened.
Did you read about the Mohenjo-daro? Did you read about this? No. It's an ancient city, you know? It's an ancient city. I mean, the city means just like the California not like the California. I mean, the ancient city, like the houses and the drainage systems and the light systems, electricities, and all things available in Mohenjo-daro. And that was in the carbon dating. They found that the year was 20,000 years ago, and it was older than Egypt. And Mohenjo-daro was in Pakistan and Indian region. You can see the check this Mohenjo-daro and you will get these details, you know. All these things are the ancient cities.
All of those areas had like, you know, things designed brilliantly, no question about it. Like it's not that there weren't smart people. We're just talking about like averages of intellect vary considerably between groups. And this is sort of like one of those like objective things that we know about. It's kind of a
And I am sure that my race was stupid and my race was coming from gorilla or chimpanzee because, you know, my grandfather looks exactly, you cannot see if you shape the monkey or if you shape the, you know, gorillas or something like that, definitely going to look like my grandfather, you know. So it is true that I am coming from some kind of, you know, genetical mutations or some kind of breeding from gorillas or something like that. My race or some kind of things. Definitely. That was a joke.
Anyway, but yeah, like it's interesting stuff. Like, and what's especially interesting about the Indian system is that like you have fundamentally a no apology breeding program for like quite literally thousands of years baked into religious sort of doctrine in a sense, which enforced those breeding programs because like, you know, if you want to be good with the priest or whatever, you had to do these things that, you know, laid out in their various like programs. And so what you notice in India in particular is
There are specific surgery was available 15,000 years ago, and the Charaks, the medical doctors, the Charaks books was 12,000 years old, and he discovered the surgery, you know, the surgery procedure, like the removing the body parts and put the organ.
Yeah. So, but my point is, like, what's interesting about India is if you actually look at the various people that are there, like, in each caste system, like legitimately people within individual castes are very good at very specific tasks, right? Like they've been bred for it for a long time. That's the theory behind, like that's the concept behind the movie Dune, where if you were to breed human beings to an extreme level, you'd get like, you know, special capabilities, whatever. And that's kind of like what Atreides, Paul is in that story, is that it's the culmination of 10,000 years of genetic breeding programs. If you keep going on and on and on doing that, yes. It's the same thing. Like if you breed dogs for long periods of time, what do you get? You get like German Shepherds.
Yes. Yeah. And also that. Interbreeding, like no, in the medical concept, you can see the read 4,000 years old books. If you read that book, that will clearly mention that the interbreeding, that's mean that if anybody from the race and marry another race, and that's mean their child will be the most power, you know, intellectuals and the genetically stronger than others.
Yeah, and interestingly, like maybe why IQ didn't evolve on average as much in India is because like the tropical areas didn't suffer from probably nearly as much general violence comparatively as sort of like Northern European as well. So not only the weathers are extremes and you have to plan way ahead with your farming, but on top of that, the types of like wars and things might have played a role as well in terms of killing off large numbers of the low IQ people. So that's part of it as well. Like if you have huge amounts of constricted troops that you throw at wars with each other, then it tends to kill off the lower IQ people to some extent. Whereas in India, for example, the low IQ castes are usually a huge portion of a laboring class that make rice and whatever else. And as a result, like, and by the way, they have the most children. So the fact that the IQ average is lower is because the lowest caste people tend to have.
Let me drop one information. I think you don't know that the Chinese, prior to the 1950s, they would frown if the people married with the same family name. It's like a no-go,
right?
Just
right.
To keep the, and it was like this for like thousands of years in China.
Because right? I think so for a very long time, people realized that genetic defects or like, you know, birth defects and stuff are more common in like, you know, marriages between things like siblings or something,
yes,
like that, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, especially in rural areas. I mean,
and like almost like many, many civilizations came to the same conclusion. Like, so I think like in Middle East, for example, it's not uncommon that people marry like cousins. And even in India, there was like a fairly
southern region thing.
Yeah, there's a common thing that like you can marry a cousin, but you can't marry a direct brother or sister.
There's one thing why I think actually Europe and also the US had just a boost in like compared to the other countries. Not necessarily in IQ, but probably in IQ as well. It's just because of the mobility. What came with the automobile was basically the possibility to mix your DNA very well, like much more efficient than it was ever possible before for humans, right? And this gives you a boost.
Yes. Kind of you are right, bro. I read that thing in a book, and that was 4,000 years old. I told you that interbreeding was more powerful than, you know, the breed in the same race. Interbreed create a powerful genetic systems, you know, powerful gene that will, you know, go create a lineage in your forward, and that will give your race and more, you know, more intellectual sons, kids in futures, and that's a truth theory.
Yeah, but what do I know? I could be right or could be wrong about that, but definitely there is an advantage about people getting more mobile.
You can see the example that Sefi married an Indian woman and his child is smarter than him. And definitely, it's a real example.
Well, it's because she's very smart. So like obvious that would happen.
And Sefi's very smart.
And all of her family members, like both my wife's parents are essentially, my wife's parents were surgeons. So we're not talking about like dull knives here in the drawer. Like, so it's,
and
like
genetically your son will be more powerful and more immune power is better than yours. You know, it's true. It's a theory.
I don't know about immune power. Those things are totally different things. But like in terms of intellect, it's obvious he's smarter than both myself and my wife at his age by an order of magnitude, which is, you know. But then again, my wife's cousin has a cousin, but he was like, you know, top of his game as far as like one of the highest test scores in the All India Medical whatever thing, and he went to All India Medical Institute and stuff. So pretty smart guy. So definitely has some good genes on that side of the family. Like her, trying to think, like what other types, like, you know, her uncle was basically a Supreme Court justice and some other things. So like pretty accomplished folks in intellectual tasks, right? We're not talking about just power for power's sake. We're talking about people that are pretty smart. So it's not a surprise then that at least one of my kids is pretty bright in the grand scheme of things. Because like definitely on my side of the family, if you like look at all of the people that were born on my side, I'm the smartest of all of the people of like my all my dad's brothers and whoever else. So for sure, like I happen to get the, you know, lucky draw or whatever. My mother was also a physician, so that probably helped get me into the right direction. But I'm objectively substantially smarter than both my mother and father, for sure. Like they have a hard time following half the things I'm talking about. So basically like, and then my son's an order of magnitude different than my wife and myself. So that's kind of worked out well for him, I suppose. Like, and he didn't turn out to be like, you know, some kind of autistic freak either. He has pretty good social, is good, not pretty good, very good social skills and all that kind of stuff too. So he kind of did pretty well for himself so far. We'll see. Yeah, it's like, but these, there's a bit of chance too. Like my second son is not as sharp as my first one for sure. So there's a bit of always luck involved, obviously. But if you take on average, if you take two smart people, are they likely to have smart children? The likelihood is high, you know, generally speaking, especially if they don't have birth defects or something else doesn't happen, right? So on average, it's just like, if you have 10 kids, how many of them are going to be very smart? The more, it's more likely if both you and your spouse are pretty sharp. Anyway, it's interesting stuff. Sometimes it's just luck and stuff too. Like, you don't know. Like in my case, I just happened to sort of meet my wife in a way that just was luck largely. So it happens. Anyway, guys, let me drop off because I've got to go see some, I'm going to do some work before the evening's over. They called me for something, so I'll catch you guys later. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of trash is under the dirt. We rape them under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play, ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Motherfuckers walking around here looking faceless, trying to make a living selling friendship bracelets. Dead ends dragging out the max amount of payments. Red down days, got them acting all bankless. Yo fam, what? Check these tokenomics. They probing this bear, flexing broken honest. I had to lay my soul down, I'm just roasting otters. And then to end a long day, 11 bowls of chronic. Never known the politic, I was born to frolic. It's been my policy to pollinate all over the plot. We got a lot of apologists jumping in at the top. We like to measure their velocity before they hit rock bottom. Over impossible loss, it's all moss, and I'm liking the odds. Fondue in the morning, forming mycological bonds. Flick the cap, though the road is highly involved. Flip a coin, diary falls. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape him under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play, ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Trying to figure out the max amount of DNA stacked in non-toxic, just to get a better place. Smacking on the hostage like this shit is play for keeps. Clowns, white knight, and all these Maybellines. They call it implausible when model after model keeps on ripping off the coat and going full throttle. Beats tearing apart your community. All these low-hanging fruits bearing zero liquidity. Got a planet in reach, coming standard to each. I'm on the back 10, stargazing after the siege, commanding all the management to grab a few seats. And then we'll round up the beasts and send a messenger east. Y'all better sign a release when I'm bumping these beats. Hands up if I got motherfuckers drumming the streets. Yo, we got a few dubs, we got a couple defeats. And if you're coming for the king, you better have some of each. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape him under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play, ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Sure.
Spaces.